Cut the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back. Oh, oh, oh.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them. You throw your arms around them. You give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison. Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell. Thank you guys so much for listening, downloading, subscribing, all that good stuff. I am so thrilled for today's episode. It is time to talk a little gambling, some point spreads, some futures, teasers, all that stuff. It's coming up next on this podcast. Dan Wolken from USA Today is going to join me. Rossi Three Stacks is back, better than ever, coming up in the second half of this podcast. I aim to tease, it's back, everything. I'm just so thrilled to be talking actual college football lines again. I got a little aroused, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I got a little too excited yesterday, looking through all the point spreads, ready to hand out some winners this weekend, probably a few losers as well, but that doesn't matter because it's all in good fun. Just gamble responsibly, that's all that I ask. And if you don't, just make sure you listen to the College Football Country. We'll give you all the best advice there is. And maybe some of the worst. College Football Country, again, download, subscribe, leave a rating and review. Love the reviews that have been coming in lately. Leave a 5-star rating. If you're new to the show, would love to hear your thoughts, your feedback. If you leave that rating, just drop your favorite college football player of all time in the comment as your name, and you might win a prize at the end of the season. I'm still coming up with what that prize should be. If you have suggestions, let me know. And before we get to Dan and Ross, I did want to touch on one thing really quickly, just because it's in the news this week. And it speaks to a larger problem with the NCAA, and that is Brock Hoffman not gaining his eligibility, not winning his appeal from the NCAA. This is a absolute disgrace for the NCAA. This honestly shows how reckless the organization can be. I think it's an evil decision. I think it's a vile decision. I think it is a heartless one and a gutless one by the NCAA. I'm honestly angered by the news that came out this week. And if you don't know the story, Brock Hoffman, former offensive lineman at Coastal Carolina, transferred to Virginia Tech to be closer to home. He's from Statesville, North Carolina. It's about 105 miles from Blacksburg. His mother had a tumor removed in 2017, a non-cancerous tumor, but it has left her with partial paralysis in her face, some upper body issues that she has now basically had to deal with, and the family has had to support her for the last several years. Brock Hoffman wants to transfer from Coastal up to Virginia Tech, and he applies for an immediate eligibility waiver. The NCAA, back in April, tells him, sorry, but you don't meet the criteria for the waiver because you live 105 miles away and the waiver says you have to be within 100. Now, is that rule caring? Is that rule compassionate? No, it's not. It's a bad rule. The rule stating that you have to be within 100 miles is kind of silly. It's an arbitrary number, and it doesn't take into account common sense. On the flip side, if you're going to apply a rule, you got to apply it, and you got to apply it properly. It says 100 miles. If you're 105, well, too bad. If you're 105 miles away and they grant you your appeal, well, the next guy who's 110 miles away, he's going to apply, and if he wins, then the next guy is going to be 115, and sooner or later, we're going to have, you know, guys 150, 200 miles away trying to use this same waiver, and all of a sudden the 100-mile rule is meaningless. The solution is to get rid of the 100-mile rule. But what happened is Brock Hoffman and his family went back and appealed again. They appealed after April. The decision came down this week. And now the decision comes down, and the verdict has been, oh, well, you didn't get the waiver to us more quickly. You didn't get it to us quick enough. Because they changed a rule in June, the NCAA did, changed a rule in June that states that now you have to transfer within a year, basically immediately, you have to transfer if there is a medical hardship between you or your family for you to be potentially eligible immediately. Which is so dumb because Brock Hoffman appealed back in April, filed for this waiver well before this changing of the rule in June. It would be like if I was driving 66 miles an hour down the highway and the speed limit was 70, and they caught me on camera, And then 6 months later, they changed the speed limit to 65. And they still have me on camera from 6 months ago. And I get a note in the mail that says I was speeding. Well, I wasn't, because when I was driving on that highway, I was obeying the law. You can't change the law 6 months later and then tell me I broke it. Same thing with Brock Hoffman. You can't use an updated rule and apply it to a guy who started the process before the rule was changed. It is unbelievably careless, spineless by the NCAA not to allow Brock Hoffman to play. All the while, you have guys like Tate Martell, who took the field last Saturday for Miami as a wide receiver, transferred to Miami because he got beat out by Justin Fields at Ohio State for the starting quarterback job, leaves Ohio State, leaves Columbus to go to Miami, and is granted immediate eligibility. There was no hardship. The mitigating circumstances that Tate Martell used in that case were essentially the changing of the head coach at Ohio State and the stress that it put on him. I mean, listen, I'm not here to litigate whether or not Tate Martell should be eligible or not, but if he's eligible, then Brock Hoffman damn sure better be eligible as well. It is a shame by the NCAA that this happened. And if you read the story where they ask, the NCAA asks Brian Hoffman, Brock Hoffman's father, they ask him, in their investigation, they ask him, well, why didn't your wife, who again had a tumor removed, why didn't your wife retire as a teacher after the procedure? To which Brian Hoffman replies, well, because we have almost $1 million in medical bills and she's a teacher. We can't exactly just retire and just pay off all these bills. We have to work. We have to earn a living and try to make money so that we can hopefully pay off some of the medical bills that have turned our family's finances upside down. I mean, it is unbelievably, unbelievably cruel what the NCAA has done to Brock Hoffman. And listen, I know some people say, you know, how can I square myself with being a college football fan knowing the NCAA is so corrupt? Every organization at some level is corrupt. It happens in some form or fashion in the NFL, in Major League Baseball, in the NBA, like either players, decision makers, coaches, executives, like whatever. There's corruption going on to some degree everywhere. So it's part of the, I guess, part of the dirty little secret of being a sports fan is you have to be able to separate yourself, your fandom from your morality. And this is no different. So I just had to get that off my chest before we get into Dan. I was shocked when I read the story. The Roanoke Times in Virginia has a great story on this. The Athletic has a great story on this as well from Andy Bitter. I encourage you to go read it and send your thoughts to the NCAA and show them just how distasteful they really are. It's an impossible job that they have to try to have a fair playing field across the board with the decisions that they make. They have very little jurisdiction in so many cases, but something like this, granting eligibility of a transfer and moving the goalposts. It's one thing to have a rule and apply it, but when you move the goalposts constantly throughout this process for no apparent reason, I have no sympathy for that. And it's a shame. Brock Hoffman will get the redshirt. He'll still get 2 years. He'll play in 2020, but it's an absolute disgrace for the NCAA. On to fun stuff. Let's talk some gambling. We've got Dan Wilken on. We're going to talk national championship futures, best over-unders, best win totals in every conference. We'll talk some Heisman odds and much more with Dan, and then we'll get to Rossi Three Stacks on the backside of that, talking teasers and best bets for week one. Hope you guys enjoy. All right, that's going to do it for College Football Country. Thank you guys again so much for listening. Be sure to tune in next week. I'll be reacting to week one of college football. Hope you guys took the advice. Again, maybe you just fade us. Who knows? But it's week one. I'm so happy it's back. Buy the boat. We're here. Hashtag buy the boat. Let's get rich this weekend. Go buy some aquamarine watercrafts, jet skis. I don't care. Whatever it is, go buy a little sailboat for yourself. It doesn't matter. We're getting rich this weekend, boys. Let's do it. And now welcome on to College Football Country, USA Today columnist, college football enthusiast, Dan Wilken. First time on the College Football Country podcast. Dan, how's it feel?
Feels great, man. I need to get my own podcast running back up. Everyone asks for it because everyone loves podcasts. I love podcasts. I just haven't done my own in a little while, so I need to get back on that. So in lieu of that, it's good to be on yours.
There you go. Well, I'm like a little test run here. You know, everybody's got to get in a practice run before the first game. This is your week zero.
My preseason, yes.
All right, so we're going to talk gambling, Dan. I know you bought the boat a few times last year. You got on the buy the boat hashtag every week. I loved it. We're going to start that again right now. So a lot of gambling to get into in this show. We'll start with the national championship. And I'm just curious, Dan, in your eyes, do you see any value whatsoever in betting on anyone to win it all other than Alabama and Clemson? Is it possible that somebody else takes home the championship?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's certainly possible. And the group of teams that could do it is small, obviously. And the odds reflect that. So, you know, if you like, you know, 10-1 on Ohio State, then have at it. But I don't think Ohio State's winning a national championship, and I don't think 10-1 is nearly good enough for me to take them. Now, you know, if you want to take a flyer on somebody, I might look at LSU at 2,400, plus 2,400. I don't think LSU is going to be the national champion, right? I don't think they're going to win the SEC, and I don't really see it happening on any level. But, you know, let's just say that Alabama, we saw the injury today with Dylan Moses, that could impact their season. For whatever reason, they just kind of have one of those years where everything goes wrong. And, you know, a couple injuries, it's not great when your best linebacker is out before the first game. So, you know, just say, hey, listen, you know, it's one of those years, things are going to go wrong. Well, who's kind of the next team? Say Georgia, but LSU has a pretty reasonable schedule, and they're going to be playing most of their best opponents at home. So, if LSU somehow won the SEC, I think they'd be a formidable playoff team. Again, I think the hardest part for them is getting in there because I think it's unlikely. But at 24-1, I don't think it's a terrible bet.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. The 24-1 side of that makes it a little more appetizing. But I can't get behind anybody in the SEC West. Dan, I think that division is going to eat itself alive. I think that outside of Alabama, you got three teams that are all pretty good. I mean, LSU, Texas A&M, and Auburn. You put any of those three teams in the ACC Coastal, they're going 11-1. I mean, they are absolutely dominating a bad division. But when they have to play one another, I mean, none of those schedules are all that manageable. I mean, LSU draws – they draw Florida out of the East. They do get Vanderbilt on the road. But I think that it's hard for me to envision a team in the SEC West because if it weren't for Alabama, I just think the division would kind of eat itself alive. What do you think about what do you think about Oklahoma? I mean, are you trusting in that defense or in Jalen Hurts for that matter? Do you think that they have a shot? Because I feel like if they can just be passable defensively, I like the Sooners' chances. I think the Big 12 is pretty bad. I think Texas is a little overrated. We'll get to them in a little bit, but – what do you think about Oklahoma?
Well, I like Oklahoma, and I would never, when it comes to the Big 12 at this point, go against Lincoln Riley because we've seen the way he's able to get a lot of great stuff out of whoever's playing quarterback, and I think it'll be the same way with Jalen Hurts. But when you say, hey, if they can just be passable on defense, well, I understand what you're saying, but actually implementing it on the field is pretty difficult because at the end of the day, and this is going to change, I think, in a couple years. But right now, they're just not very talented on the defensive side of the ball. And I think Alex Grinch is going to do a good job as their coordinator. And I like what their mentality is and how they want to rebuild it. But it comes down to talent for me. And I just don't see them having enough of it on the defensive side of the ball to make a real legitimate run at the national championship.
The reason that I like them at 16-1 is because I look at Georgia, who's right now 6.5-1 to win it all. I don't think there is that much of a difference to me between Georgia and Oklahoma in terms of the likelihood to get to the playoff. Because Georgia's going to obviously have to go through Alabama if they win the SEC, or they're getting in as a one-loss at large. Oklahoma, I feel like the path to getting to the playoff is a little more clear for Oklahoma. And once they get there, like I said, I would take a team at 16-1 with their chances having, in my opinion, an easier path than I would Georgia. I mean, do you think that that's crazy? I mean, to me, is there that much of a gap between the Bulldogs and Oklahoma?
Well, let me think of it this way, and I agree with what you're saying. There's probably not a huge gap in terms of you know likelihood once right. You get in there. But if the playoff, let's just say, was Oklahoma, Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State, And again, we haven't seen any of these teams play, so we're just guessing. But
sure.
I mean, Oklahoma would probably be 10-1 in that field. So 10-1 versus 16-1 before you've even played a game, you know, I'm not sure the value is that great.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm buying in on Jalen Hurts. And speaking of Jalen Hurts, before we move on to the conferences, because I want to get to those, are you at all worried about Alabama not having a safety net like they did last year? I mean, if it weren't for Jalen Hurts, Alabama loses potentially in the SEC title game. It probably still makes the playoff based on, you know, what we thought of them going into that game. But are you worried at all about, you know, not having a former SEC offensive player of the year backing up Tua anymore?
I'm not worried about it particularly, and I don't know how good Mac Jones really is. I think they like him and think he could be something in the future. So if he had to play, I'm sure he'd do a competent enough job to give them chances to win. I'm more concerned for Alabama about their defense.
Yeah.
Part of the reason to me why Tua put up those huge stats and everybody got enamored with Nick Saban's opening up the offense, he's playing so much faster, he's pulling back the reins and he's letting Tua play just much more aggressively than Saban quarterbacks typically play. And that was all true, but I think the reason why Saban did that had as much to do with his defense not being as good as Tua being great. Because I just think Saban understood last year that in order to maximize their team and be good, you know, potentially great, they had to score a bunch of points. And I think it's going to be the same thing this year, especially with that, you know, that Dylan Moses injury. That to me is, I don't want to say it's season altering or season changing, because they do have so much talent. But I think we're going to have to probably, if you're Nick Saban, say we've got to open it up again and play fast again. And I think that will bury a lot of people, but once you get into the playoff, is that the right way for them to build an identity? I still don't think that's a very comfortable thing for Alabama, and I'm not sure that that's a great path for them to win a championship.
Yeah, and I do wonder, I mean, they'll open it up. To your point, you're exactly right. I wonder if Alabama learned a little bit last year, maybe we need to protect Tua a little bit better than we did. Maybe not put him in as many positions where he's taking on hits. I mean, remember, he was limping to the finish line last season. Probably played a part of a role in why Alabama struggled like they did late, especially against Clemson. So, you know, Najee Harris is suspended for a half against Duke. That doesn't matter. I mean, once they get those guys back, do they rely more on those guys, getting the ball out of Tua's hands more quickly to guys like Ruggs and, of course, Jerry Jeudy? I don't know. But we got to move on. So let's talk conferences here. I want to know, Dan, your favorite win total in all the Power 5 leagues. We'll start with the ACC. Who's the win total in that conference that you're looking at, over or under?
Well, I think, to me, I think Virginia over the 6 is a lock, an absolute lock. I think this Virginia team is pretty good. I know that the Coastal is often crazy, and some of the teams that we think are going to be good end up being pretty mediocre and vice versa, and often there's just total chaos and a bunch of teams beating each other. But, you know, this is a division right now where, you know, you've got Miami who's going through this transition, and I like what I saw from Jaren Williams in the first game, but that offensive line is bad, and they're going to lose some games that they probably wouldn't otherwise lose. Georgia Tech's going through this massive transition, and who knows how good they're going to be. North Carolina, first-year Mack Brown, kind of blending systems. Virginia knows at this point their identity and who they are. They got a lot of guys back. Bronco Mendenhall is an awesome defensive coach. I think they cruise to the over there.
So, I mean, they're a fascinating one because they opened at 6. They've been, at least on FanDuel, they've been bet up to 7.5. So people were kind of on.
I'll take the over.
That's what I was going to ask you. You would take over 7.5 with them? Man.
Yeah, I think they win 9 games this year.
Really? So I don't know, you didn't have a vote, or did you, for the ACC preseason poll?
No, I didn't.
Would you have voted them to win the Coastal?
Yeah, I think I probably would have.
Wow.
Just because who else are you going to trust at this point. And again, I don't know that, you know, they're going to sit, we're going to sit there and, you know, talk about them as a top 10 type team. I don't think it's that. But, you know, you just kind of go through their schedule. I mean, they've got some pretty, frankly, some pretty easy wins on there. I mean, you certainly think they're going to pick off Liberty at home, and, you know, they get Georgia Tech at home.
Yeah.
They go to Louisville, who doesn't look particularly good on paper. They get Duke at home, you know, Old Dominion, William & Mary. You know, I just figure that they're going to find their way to 8 or 9 wins pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, there's only one game on the schedule where you look at and go, okay, that's almost certainly a loss. That's at Notre Dame, which isn't even a lock, but it's probably a pretty heavy Notre Dame lean. Outside of that, yes, Virginia should have a fighter's chance in every other game that they play. I struggle to get behind Virginia to the degree that you do. I'd bet them over at 6. 7.5, I'd be more nervous. I just look at the way they played last season, and yes, they were playing better football at the end of the year. Yes, they should have beaten Virginia Tech. That was one of the most nonsensical games of the whole year. They outplayed Virginia Tech in that game, and they lost. I don't put much stock in the bowl game. I know they beat South Carolina, shut them out. South Carolina didn't play a bunch of guys. I'm not behind that 100%. Look at the teams they beat last year, Dan. I mean, Richmond, Ohio, Louisville. They did beat Miami. Duke, that was Duke with an injured Daniel Jones. North Carolina, I mean, they didn't exactly have an impressive win. What was their most impressive win last year? Was it South Carolina in the bowl game? Was it Miami? I mean, I'm just not sold. I think they got marginally better in a conference that got demonstrably worse.
I agree with you, but I think the two things that would offset that would be, one, I don't think the division's really any better than it was last year.
Probably not by much.
And then the second thing is, I understand what you're saying about, you know, who they beat, and they didn't light the world on fire. But if you remember, go back to last summer. I mean, Bronco Mendenhall was talking about, you know, I can't remember his exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, you know, we have a bunch of guys who are not ACC players. And I think over – this is now, you know, year three, you've got an evolution of the roster, more of the guys they've recruited. And I just have a lot of respect for Bronco as a coach. I think he's really good on the defensive side of the ball. And you're talking about a division where there's just so many quarterback questions. I think they're going to hold a lot of people to some pretty low numbers.
Yeah, the defense is going to be really good. And in a division where there's not a lot of great quarterback play, that could make the difference. So I get why people like Virginia. I couldn't get behind them picking them to win the division. My team, real quickly, and we'll move on. I think Wake at over 6 is a lock. I think Wake Forest might start 6-0. I mean, that schedule early on, they've got a huge one on Friday against Utah State. Now, Utah State turned over a lot of their roster, but they do have Jordan Love, who might be a first-round pick at quarterback. But they get through Utah State. Rice, UNC, Elon, next three games, on the road against BC is kind of dicey. But then Louisville, they could be 6-0. I mean, at the worst, 5-1, and then you just have to pick off two wins between Florida State, NC State, Virginia Tech, Clemson's a loss. Duke, Syracuse, I like this Wake team. They bring back a ton. You talk about Bronco Mendenhall building something over the span of 3-4 years. Dave Clawson's done a really good job at building a solid foundation for Wake.
Yeah, no, he's done a really nice job. They're, like you said, very solid, and I don't know what their ceiling is as a program. I don't think they're going to be getting back to the Orange Bowl anytime soon, but I agree with you. I mean, that's – they're not easy to play, and you know, from an offensive standpoint, they've found some ways to score.
Yeah, they're going to have a great offense. I mean, again, they're a team, like you said, ceiling is low, but I think the floor is pretty high. David Hale had a great piece, or I guess it was a tweet, like earlier this summer, where he ranked all the positional units in the ACC, and I'm pretty sure Wake was no lower than 8th. In any position. It was 8th or 9th. Like, they just don't have a glaring weakness. And in this conference right now, if you're not Clemson, that's saying a lot. So I like Wake. I think Wake could kind of be like almost like what Northwestern is half the time, where you look up and it's October and they're 6-0 and really beating anybody, but yeah, the record looks good. Let's move to the Big Ten, Northwestern's conference. In the Big Ten, over under, who's the team that you kind of like?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little hesitant on this one, but I think Michigan State goes over the 7.5 wins this year. I don't know if that's the number you've got still, but you know, I think they're probably, you know, an eight win team. They could win 9. I don't see them falling below 8 this year.
It was a bad offense last season. I mean, it's hard to be any worse than what they had. I mean, it was brutal. I mean, I remember watching them against the likes of Purdue and Maryland late in the year. I mean, they couldn't move the ball against Nebraska. That game was just an atrocity. They only put up 14 on Rutgers. I mean, you're doing something wrong. Like, they needed a change. But
they made some changes.
They did.
And look, I think when you start to kind of break down their schedule, you know, I think they start 3-0. The big one there would be Arizona State in week 3, but they get them in East Lansing, and I think that'll be a win for them. You know, you get Indiana at home, you get Illinois at home, you get Rutgers on the road, you get Maryland at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they're solid 7 wins, and then the question is just can they knock off one of the ranked teams, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Penn State, and they always seem to be good for one upset a year, and they also have Northwestern on the road. So, you know, I think 8 to me is the floor for them.
In the last 10 years, they've never had 2 straight, even average seasons. I mean, they won 6 games. They won 6 games in 09. They went 11-2 the next year. They went 7-6 in 2012. 13-1 the next season. 3-9 a couple years ago. They won 10 games the next year. Like, D'Antonio's teams just, they don't stay down for long. And I mean, if 7-6 is a bad season, I do think they bounce back. I'm with you on that one. Really quickly, the one I like, I'm actually going under on Wisconsin, 8.5. They lost a ton of talent on the offensive line. I know Jonathan Taylor is tremendous, but, you know, Wisconsin does – they produce offensive linemen, but with that kind of inexperience, they've also got, you know, a brand-new quarterback. They named Jack Cohn the starter. I think there's a lot of questions for them. And, again, it's a very watered-down version of the SEC West, but in the same sense that some of those teams could knock one another off, somebody's going to have to, you know, bring up the rear in that – not bring up the rear, but bring up the rear of the contenders. And I think Wisconsin might be that one. I like Iowa. I like Nebraska. I even like Purdue and Minnesota in that division. Northwestern's good. So I think Wisconsin takes a step back. How about in the Big 12?
Yeah, you know, like you mentioned with the Big 12, what is that league this year beyond Texas and Oklahoma? And, you know, I one of the things that's really hard to me about the Big 12 is, you know, all the teams kind of end up beating each other once you get past that top tier. So, you know, I think what I'm going to do is take the over on West Virginia. And I've got the number at 5.
Mm-hmm.
I understand new coach, what they've lost. But, by the way, Neil Brown is really, really, really good.
Yeah, he is. And they upgraded it, coach.
I don't think that their talent level is terrible across the board. So, you know, in a league where a lot of these teams kind of look the same and will beat up on each other, in West Virginia to me looks like classic 6-6.
Yeah, I mean, and they lost a few guys in the transfer portal, I remember early. But, yeah, I'll be honest with you, man. Whether or not they go over this year, I think they upgraded it, coach. I think Neil Brown is a star in the making. I mean, what he was able to do at Troy, some of the wins that they pulled off. I mean, obviously everybody remembers the LSU one a couple years ago. But
Nebraska.
Exactly. I mean, that is a legit program that he built at Troy. I don't think that West Virginia will be down for long. They face some challenges being in the Big 12. I mean, the geographical challenge that they face is a tough one. But, listen, if you can coach, you can coach. I think West Virginia is going to be just fine with him. The team that I'm going with, I'm actually going to go with another under. I'm going to go under 9.5 for Texas. I think Tom Herman is a really good coach, and he does a really good job when little is expected of them. He's the best coach in the country as an underdog. I mean, it's his record straight up as an underdog is ridiculous. They're not going to be a dog often this year. I know they're kind of a slight favorite now in that game against LSU. That game may determine whether or not this number goes over 9.5. But you're talking about a team that benefited from a lot of close wins last season. And, of course, ended the season with a great win over Georgia, but a deflated Georgia team. I don't care what anybody says. If they had not beaten Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, I don't know that there's the same level. People would certainly expect Texas to be good. I don't know that they would have it to this same level. A lot of advanced numbers tell you that the under is a safe play with Texas, so I'm going to ride it. I'm going to say this. I'm going to go with the smart guys and say under 9.5. Oregon in the Pac-12 is my over. I'm going to go first on this one, Dan, because I'm curious what you think about the Ducks. So in the Pac-12, I'm taking Oregon over 8.5. I know that people are starting to – I don't know if they're a sleeper anymore because people are really starting to talk about the Ducks, but I think Oregon could be a playoff team, man. I really do. Justin Herbert, I like Mario Cristobal. I think they've got a lot of talent on the defensive line as well. I think Oregon could surprise some folks starting this weekend. I like them to beat Auburn. I like them to go over 8.5.
Well, there's no doubt that they've accumulated a lot of talent there in a pretty short period of time. And from a recruiting standpoint, you can't knock what Cristobal's done. You know, I think the play calling last year was a little bit wacky. I didn't always love it. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see Justin Herbert in week one play against a real defense full of, you know, NFL-type athletes against Auburn. To me, that game is just so key for the entire season for them and for the Pac-12. I'm excited about Oregon's future. I'd like the idea that they're going to be back, quote-unquote. I'm not totally ready to buy in on them, but that's not a terrible bet.
Yeah, I think 8.5 is a good one. I mean, they go on the road to Stanford. They go on the road to Washington. So the schedule's not great, but I return 5 starters in the offensive line. I'm buying into Herbert. Maybe, you know, again, I like him to go to the playoff. That's fine. But at 8.5, I do think that this team wins the Pac-12 North. I mean, Washington's good. I just don't know how good they are. And they're, you know, a lot is going to be riding on Jacob Eason. What do you think in the Pac-12? Who's the team that you're like?
Yeah, well, that's exactly
are?
Where I was going.
Ooh.
I'm going to go under the 9.5 on Washington.
There you go.
I think it's just, for the last couple years, it's just been a massively overrated program. And, you know, Chris Peterson is a heck of a coach, no doubt about it. But they've lost some head scratchers. I mean, just some real, you know, games that you look at and go, they shouldn't be losing to, you know, Arizona State a couple years ago, or, you know, last year the game against Auburn. I mean, there's no way they should have lost that game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I kind of look at them with a 5-loss potential this year. And I've just heard some iffy comments coming out of Washington about Jacob Eason and how good he is.
Yep.
I'm not sold on him either. And, you know, that you got to go to BYU, and you got USC. You got to go to Stanford. A big game against Oregon at home. But, like, I don't know. Like, I have a funny feeling about Washington. I think this is going to be a real disappointing year for them.
They are 1-5, or were 1-5 last year as a home favorite against the spread. I mean, this is a team that struggles. And to your point, they've lost twice as a double-digit favorite in the last couple of years. I mean, they just have these hiccups that you never see coming. So I'm selling Washington as well. I wouldn't – again, I like Oregon over more than I like Washington under, because I do think that the Huskies, I mean, still in that Pac-12, it's not exactly the SEC West. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that Oregon has a better roster, and they have a better quarterback. So I would side with Oregon there. How about in the SEC? Your neck of the woods here. Who is the team in the SEC that you think is the best bet to go over or under?
I think it's Vanderbilt in the under.
Ooh.
I think Vanderbilt's going to be bad. And, you know, the number I've got is 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see 5 wins on that schedule for them. You know, they to me, you know, have a pretty tough draw, and they have to play Purdue in the non-conference. I just am not seeing a lot of wins there. I think Derek Mason has been able to kind of scratch out some seasons that, you know, they'll win a game or two that they shouldn't. But, you know, I think this is the year they probably lose to Tennessee, which has been a big boost for them.
They got to go
to Ole Miss. You know, they get LSU, which is a brutal draw out of the West. I think this is a disaster for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, even in the non-conference, UNLV should be a win. I guess East Tennessee State or two, but Northern Illinois, I guess, sort of tricky. I mean, I do. I'm with you. And Purdue, that's a loss. Like, Purdue is going to beat them in West Lafayette. I mean, Purdue will win. So you're looking at 0-3 out of the gate. I'm with you. I'm with you on Vandy. The team I like, and I'm very interested to see what you think. I love Tennessee over 6.5. I think the Vols are going to be good, man. And I think, like, second place in the East good if Garantano takes a big step forward. He's got talent on offense. I mean, they have some of the best core of wide receivers in the SEC and quite honestly in the country between Juwan Jennings, Marquez Callaway. And I haven't seen it with my own two eyes, but I've heard people talk about Garantano over the offseason, saying that he has grown as a leader, that he's even grown as a player. If he can finally live up to that Elite 11 potential and be consistent, not turn the ball over, I feel like it's there for the taking. And I love what Jeremy Pruitt kind of did, building a little bit and resurrecting a bit of culture in year one. How do you feel about the Vols? 6.5 is the number.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's going to be probably right on it. You know, I think they win 6 or 7. I don't think they are a lock for 8. Although, you know, certainly they have some games they should win on their schedule. You know, non-conference, UAB, Chattanooga, BYU, Georgia State. I think that gives them 4, you know, coming out of the gates, and Vanderbilt's probably 5. You know, the question is just kind of how good is Kentucky, yeah. How good is Missouri? They've got to go on the road, both of those. I don't think they beat Florida or Georgia this year. So I think it's going to be touch and go for them to win 7.
I'm a little down on Florida. I mean, obviously we were lucky enough to have watched them once. They were okay. I mean, Miami was fine. Yeah. I mean, they made a lot of boneheaded mistakes and a lot of stuff that it's not just week one stuff with Florida. I just wonder the discipline problems through Florida, like, is that going to haunt them down the line? Something Tennessee's dealt with in the past, too. I like Tennessee. 2 automatic losses in Georgia and Alabama, but the rest of the 10 games, they could win 7 or 8 of those. We'll see. So, meanwhile, we got a couple more real quickly before we go, Dinks. I know you're a busy guy. First head coach fired. What do you think here? And I pull up the odds just so, you know, the listeners can kind of know what we're talking about here. I know that we – oh, I almost lost it. There it is. So, first head coach fired. Clay Helton is the favorite, 5.5 to 1. Chris Ash, 6 to 1. Lovie Smith, 9 to 1. Malzahn, 10 to 1. Kalani Sitake, Ed Orgeron, Justin Fuente, Willie Taggart, some of the other names on that list. Any of those guys in your mind jump out as the guy who could be the first to go?
I'm going to go off the board here.
Okay.
I think you could probably find some odds elsewhere, but I'm going to go Kevin Sumlin.
Really? Well, after last Saturday, you might not be wrong. That was bad.
Yeah, I mean it's a mess out there, and it's just not a good situation. I think there's some deep dissatisfaction with the job he's doing, and they're not going to be very good this year. So I think that one could be resolved pretty quickly.
What has gone wrong? I mean, it seemed like on paper last year was a match made in heaven. You bring back Tate. I know Tate was hurt last year, but, I mean, Sumlin and Tate together in Arizona, Sumlin was dynamite at Houston, and I know there were a ton of problems bubbling beneath the surface at A&M that kind of led to what happened, the fallout there, but how did it go sour so quickly?
Well, I think there's probably been some off-field challenges that have been difficult. When you go from a job like A&M right into Arizona, you don't have a year off. I think maybe is the fire still there? Is the hunger still there? Did you need some time to recharge? You know, I think we see that with coaches sometimes, especially just these huge stress SEC jobs. I think maybe the same with Mark Richt at Miami.
Yeah,
probably the timing wouldn't have worked out, but probably would have been better with a year off rather than jumping right into something if you're not, you know, totally all in emotionally. So that would just be my pick. I don't think most of the ones, frankly, on this list are getting fired. Clay Helton is going to get fired, yeah, almost certainly. But, you know, is it going to be early in the season? I don't know. Chris Ash is kind of a no-brainer, but I don't think there's any value there.
Right.
So well, I'm kind of off the board on that one.
So, all right, with respect to the odds, forget about those for a second. Clay Helton, Fresno State to open, Stanford, BYU, Utah, Washington, Notre Dame. If they are 1-5, which, I mean, you never know. With that schedule, it's on the table. If they're 1-5, is he the head coach October 19th?
The only thing about that, and you're probably right, if it goes that poorly, I'm not sure it will.
It might not, but if it is.
The only thing is they don't they have an athletic director right now in Lynn Swann, and I don't believe that Lynn Swann is going to be the athletic director for a particularly long time.
Right.
So I do think the question will be, where are they in their athletic director search process? And I think that may kind of impact a lot of the timing on this.
Yeah, I mean, no question, by December he'll be gone. Pete Thamel wrote a great story about it, I know, a few weeks ago, just about the turmoil going on down there. It's a mess. So real quickly, Heisman Trophy. Now, this is the dumbest bet in college football. Like, there is almost never any value in betting this. I've been a big proponent of, I've always said, like, just never bet the favorites for the Heisman. They almost never win. It's very rare that a favorite wins this thing. Mariota did it. Derrick Henry sort of did it. Baker Mayfield sort of did it. I mean, Baker was certainly on the short list. This year, it feels like Tua and Trevor Lawrence are way out in front of the pack. They're co-favorites on Bovada. They're plus 260. Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields are next at 12-1. But is there anybody here? Is it Tua and Trevor to lose? Is there somebody else who you think there's value in betting on before the season?
Yeah, the only guys who I could maybe make a case for would be DeAndre Swift at Georgia. And maybe, you know, if something crazy happened, like Rondale Moore at Purdue. You know, somebody who is racking up crazy stats on a team that is good but is not really a national championship-type team. I mean, could Rondale Moore have, you know, a bunch of, you know, 250-yard receiving games or something like that? But I don't think there's much value in most of these names.
Yeah, I mean, you look, I guess, like Ian Book, if Notre Dame runs the table, like maybe. I mean, it's 40-1. I mean, again, you're talking long shots here. Like, is that out there? There really isn't another guy. I'll tell you this, and then we'll go, Dan, because I'm just curious where you stand on this. I talked to Mark Ennis last week from Louisville about this same kind of thesis. I don't think Trevor's winning it this year. I think he's going to have a tremendous season. I think he's going to top what he did last year from a numbers standpoint. He's going to start the whole year. Offense is great. He's not going to play in a game that matters after October. And that's kind of the same thing that happened with Tua a year ago, where Tua was on the bench for the second half of so many games. I mean, Clemson in the last month of the season plays Wofford, NC State, Wake, South Carolina, and then whoever comes out of the Coastal. Meanwhile, Alabama's playing LSU on the road. They're playing Auburn on the road. They get Georgia potentially in the SEC championship game. I just think Tua's going to be playing in spotlight games, making big plays, and Trevor's got another year. So I think some voters might keep that in the back of their mind. All right, well, hey, if we don't give it to Trevor now, he'll get it a year from now. Plus, Tua is going to be gone. Some voters might feel like Tua deserved it last year. So they're going to feel obligated maybe to give it to him this year if it's close between him and Trevor Lawrence. I think Tua should be the favorite. I think Tua should be favored over Trevor Lawrence. What do you think?
Yeah, there's certainly a case to be made for that. And Trevor Lawrence might get a little bit hurt by the fact that the expectations, I think, have actually gotten a little out of control.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable, obviously, in the national championship game. But you know, when you start hearing people talk about, oh, he's the best college quarterback ever. Somebody said that the other day.
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, Urban Meyer. You know,
who coached maybe the greatest quarterback ever. Like Urban coached Tim Tebow.
Let's slow down a little bit, yeah. Right? And so, you know, if he comes out and has a couple bad games or just mediocre games, you know, it probably isn't fair, but some people may – kind of dock him even more because of that. So you could be right on that. And you know, if Tua stays healthy, he's going to put up huge numbers. There's no doubt.
Listen, the Heisman is, yes, it's the best player in the country. It's supposed to be. It's as much about catching us by surprise or outperforming expectations as it is being great. I mean, it's a reason why there are guys that don't win it back-to-back. Like, when the bar gets set at an unrealistic level, you're judged against it, fairly or not. And I agree with you on Trevor Lawrence. Like, it's going to be really hard for him to do that, especially when you're playing Louisville in the middle of October and Boston College. You're really not going to have a chance to catch us by surprise. Like, We kind of expect you to throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns every game, and if you don't do it, then we're going to be asking what's wrong. So I think that that could be the case for Trevor Lawrence this year. He'll be great. Clemson will run the table, I think. I think they're going to play for the national title again, but I don't think Trevor Lawrence wins the Heisman Trophy this year. Dan, that was a lot of fun. I would love to catch up with you again. Hopefully you get your own podcast rolling again before long, but if not, you have a welcome invitation on this show anytime you want.
All right. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Dan, we'll talk to you. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks.
And now it is time for the main event. My good friend, legend of the podcast, staple of the show, you might even say, back for year three, Rossi Three Stacks. Rossi, what's up, man?
Josh, I can't tell you how good it is to be back in the saddle. I love the term staple and legend there.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely, yeah. I kind of like being a staple of the show. I hold it all together.
You really are. We started getting, reviews and ratings on you late in the season last year. Like, people started to really dig the Rossi Three Stacks. We were just kind of doing it just to screw around at the end of the podcast, and all of a sudden you've become a hit.
Listen, the Three Stacks Mafia, thanks to our friend Will Belberti, shout out, is now 17 people strong on Twitter.
That's right.
This train is rolling, baby.
I bet by the end of the season you might hit 20 followers if we're lucky.
The drive for 25, it launched last week. It's going to be going, hopefully, over the next week or two until we get there, and then who knows? Maybe we'll push it to 50 by the end of the year.
All right. Tell the people out there, because I guess we only need 8 of them, so if you're listening, where they can follow you on Twitter.
At Rossi3Stacks with an X.
With an X. Don't forget the X. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, Ross, we're going to take this week by week. We just want to go 1-0 every week. If we go 1-0 every week, we're buying 10 boats. So
never go broke making a profit. That's what I've always said.
Absolutely. So we're going to dive right in here for I Aim to Tease, year three, three-team teaser. We might get a little squirrely at the end, but who are the three games in week one that you're throwing in a teaser and hoping to make a little bit of money off of?
Yeah, so look, first week of the year, bet what you know. There's a lot of misinformation out there. Every team is super confident. We joke about teams flying around, having fun, ready to hit somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, all you have is coach speak and player speak. Everybody's optimistic coming out of training camp. So week one, I do recommend betting the teams you are most comfortable with, that you followed the most over the years. So with that, the first game we like is Virginia Tech -5 at Boston College. I'm a huge fan early in the year of teams that return quarterbacks and receivers from the year before. I think me and my friend Bill Connolly love continuity in the passing game. And so Virginia Tech obviously bringing back Ryan Willis and some star receivers with Hazleton. And people forget P.J. Hairston's younger brother, Trey Turner.
That's right.
Yep, Hezekiah Grimsley, even Phil Patterson. Many people have been ready to break out for a little bit. I love that passing game. Dalton Keene at tight end. So early in the year, I'm just very high on Virginia Tech's offense. I also think they're going to be playing – it's a bit of a chip on their shoulder with stuff you have already talked about in this podcast, and I won't get into anymore. But I think they are going to be ready to roll. And also, they've looked really good in openers under Fuente in the last 2 years. I mean, I guess last year against FSU ended up not being that impressive of a win, but at a time it was really good. And certainly West Virginia the year before. And I think Tennessee was the year before that.
Yeah.
And then for a half, they looked really good until the fumbles came around.
Yeah,
so
point
being, Fuente has this team ready to roll in openers. So I like VT -5, teasing them down to, I guess, +1, +2. I think they win the game.
Yeah, I mean, going on the road, the one concern in that game is, because, I mean, I agree with you on the offense, but A.J. Dillon, last year, ACC Player of the Year, which it's funny how, I mean, he's the least talked about returning player of the year I can ever remember. Like, no, just nobody even cares. It's all about Trevor Lawrence and Clemson. But
right.
Virginia Tech's run defense was atrocious last year, and they're going to have to be able to slow him down. Obviously, BC replacing, I think, 4 starters in the offensive line, if I'm not mistaken, at least 3.
Yep.
So a lot of turnover there, which would lead you to believe that Dillon won't be quite as dominant as he was last season when he ran for, 1,100 yards. So I do think that you're right. I think Virginia Tech does win the game. That offense is going to put up points, man. That's going to be a scary offense this year.
Absolutely.
If Ryan Willis just doesn't make a ton of mistakes, which he didn't really last year. So I'm with you on Virginia Tech. I agree with you. I do think they get the win. So if you're going to tease it where you're getting a point or two, I think that's a no-brainer. What else you got?
Right on. Okay. Well, the other team that I follow closely, to the North Carolina South Carolina game. Big one down in your neck of the woods in Charlotte this weekend.
You better tease this one the right way
in this game.
Ooh, under. Okay.
So right now it's at 63.5. If you tease that up to 69.5 or 70, whatever it is that you're doing, I actually think that's the play. So North Carolina obviously is starting Sam Howell, true freshman quarterback, first game in his hometown against a pretty good South Carolina defense.
Yeah.
By SEC standards, pretty good. By anybody else's standards, very good. They've got some studs on defense, some future NFL players. I actually think that North Carolina's defense is a little better than people give them credit for, especially the starters. So I think that front line, by now, they're not going to be necessarily hurt, which was their issue last year. And so other than two guys that are sitting out for the first half because of suspensions from last year, they're pretty much healthy and ready to go. And so I actually think it's going to be more like a 31-21 game than the shootout that's maybe being projected. I don't see North Carolina scoring more than two or three touchdowns, and I actually think they will keep South Carolina at bay. So the line, which has gotten up to 10 or 10.5, may be right. The closer we get to this game, the more it looks like South Carolina does win comfortably. But I don't think there's going to be that many points in this game with a freshman quarterback and one very good defense and one decent defense.
I'll do you one better. If you want to win a little bit of real money on that game, why don't you tease the under and South Carolina down to -3?
Yeah, it's a good one. Sure.
You just don't want to bet against the Tar Heels.
You could do that.
You just don't want to bet against the Tar Heels.
It's not my favorite thing to do, but I have proven many times on this podcast that I'm more than willing to do that. Once I'm confident that they're not good, man, I bet against Larry Fedora all day long. But I'm a Mac Brown guy. And Dre Bly. This is my first opportunity to bet against Dre Bly, one of my favorite players, maybe my single favorite player of all time. Now back on the Tar Heel coaching staff.
Wow.
Fun fact about me, I wore a Dre Bly UNC jersey to bed basically every night from when I was like 6 to about 8.
You might have to do that on Friday night for good luck.
Yeah, I'll go track it down.
They're doing some good things at North Carolina. I know you're high on them this year.
I am high on the trajectory of the program.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. You are high on them in 3 years when, you know, they actually have depth. And I mean, you know, your point about their defense. I mean, anytime you can put a backup quarterback at linebacker, you have to do it. And for North Carolina, I think this is a bold strategy.
He's an elite athlete.
Yeah. All right. Well, South Carolina has probably like 3 or 4 NFL players on defense, and Carolina's playing Chaz Surratt. So I like South Carolina to win comfortably.
Sure. And they've all made. But look, the thing about North Carolina's defense, again, the starting, and I got distracted a second ago, so that was not my most coherent point about their defense. But their defensive line, Jason Sturbridge, Aaron Crawford, Tamon Fox, the kind of that outside linebacker, defensive end hybrid, all three are very likely NFL players. Mac Brown has been raving about Jason Sturbridge. And so when you look at South Carolina, is very likely going to try to pound the ball on them, especially with Rico Dowdle and now Tavian Feaster in the backfield. Actually could be a strength of North Carolina's defense is up the middle there. Now, yes, the linebackers are, you know, your one starting linebacker, Dominic Ross, is suspended for a half, so Chaz Surratt is starting at middle linebacker. First time he's played linebacker or had to tackle somebody. Well, he's had to tackle some people. He threw a lot of interceptions.
He did throw a lot of picks.
Yeah, never mind. He's good.
He's ready. He's been waiting for this for years. All right. I like teasing, I guess, South Carolina down to -3. I think that one actually would be a lock. But I like the underplay there, too. I don't see North Carolina putting up a ton of points. That's a tough spot for Sam Howell. I mean, coming back to your hometown, NFL stadium, there's just a lot riding on that. I'll be interested to see how much they rotate in Jace Reuter. I know that Mac did say that they're going to play both of them. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a way to keep Reuter from transferring out like Cade Fortin did.
I think that is legit. I think they actually are going to play him. I mean, if Sam Howell comes out and is actually moving the ball, like, sure, they're going to leave him in. Reuter's really good. I talked to you about him a lot in the offseason. He was the guy I thought was going to win the job.
Yeah.
Especially in Longo's offense, which if you look at what he did with Ole Miss last year, you know, their quarterback, Tiamu, would run the ball a decent bit. I think against South Carolina, he ran the ball like 19 times or something like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of design runs. And so as Phil Longo said, he played South Carolina 4 games ago, so he's pretty well versed in what they're going to do on defense, and they had a lot of success running the ball, so it would not surprise me at all if Reuter came in for some designed runs or even makes South Carolina think it's a designed run and then, you know, somebody releases deep or something like that. I bet they'll get like a touchdown on a or a long play on a, that kind of a set.
Yeah, what about your third game here? You got Virginia Tech, and then you got the Carolina-South Carolina
under. Yeah, man. So Ole Miss and Memphis is a game that I'm really interested in this weekend. I've got some sources deep within the Ole Miss fan base, really close to the program, that are not especially confident in Ole Miss's offensive line. But the more I looked at this game, I actually do think it's going to be very, very close. And right now Ole Miss is a 5.5-point underdog. So I like teasing them up to like 11.5 or 12. I think Ole Miss, especially on defense, will be better than expected. The offense is going to be young. Scotty Phillips is a really good running back. And they, of course, are breaking in a new quarterback. But I think they're actually still pretty talented in offense. I think the defense will be better. I think this game is very close. They still might lose, but I don't see them losing this game by more than 10 points, certainly. So teasing it up to 11.5, 12, 12.5, something like that, is a pretty good play.
Interesting. I don't know that I would touch it. Matt Corral is a super talented quarterback, and we'll find out, you know, a little bit more about him on Saturday. I mean, he was a one-time Florida commit, yep, then flipped to Ole Miss late in the process. I get why there might be some excitement around Ole Miss. I mean, that they can at least – in a game like this, it's a big game. But for Memphis, man, this is the classic – this is like – so Cincinnati's playing Ohio State in week two. And Cincinnati – a lot of those kids wanted to go to Ohio State. And
right.
I wonder, I mean, now I don't know how many kids in the Memphis area. It's not far from Oxford, like dream of going to Ole Miss.
It's pretty close.
It is very close. But I don't know, the point being, I don't know how many kids like dream of going to Ole Miss. They're probably dreaming of playing for Tennessee or Alabama or whatever. But I bet that a lot of them weren't offered by Ole Miss. I would be willing to bet that there are guys in that team that feel like this is the chance for them to prove, like, hey, well, I mean, we should have been, you know, SEC. We should have been offered by an SEC program like Ole Miss, and it's a super close rivalry in terms of proximity. So I mean, you go back a couple years ago, I know it was the Paxton Lynch team, but Memphis, they beat Ole Miss. I mean, they beat them outright, and I want to say that was 2015.
Look, they're favored by 5.5 in this game.
Yeah, they
so,
were.
I mean, that is the expectation.
Yeah, I. So it's 5.5. You're teasing it basically to 11.5.
Yep.
All right, Ross.
Again, you know I like teasing the number. It's a game that I feel like even if Memphis does win, even by the projected amount, you know, like by a touchdown, I don't see them winning by more than a touchdown or 10 points if things go wild.
Yeah, Ross, you know what? Sometimes you just have to agree to disagree.
Sure. Hey, yeah. That's what makes for good radio.
It sure does. Now, when Virginia Tech covers the spread and when the Carolina game goes under and Ole Miss – I guess covers. How would you lose this? I'm trying to do this math in my head. This is great. I guess
when Ole Miss throws a pick six at the end of the game and Memphis goes down and wins by 14.
Exactly, and then you lose your teaser. You would have won
mm-hmm.
otherwise. Yeah, that's a shame. All right. Well, you know what, Ross? That's fine. let's move on. So you that's your 3-team teaser. So you've got Ole Miss
yep.
plus 11.5. Virginia Tech plus 1, plus 1.5, whatever it is,
yep.
and under 70 in the Carolina game?
Yep.
All right, so
wherever
that's your teaser.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's your teaser. All right, Ross, you have any more for us?
Well, just a couple others to look into on your own. We won't spend any time on them.
Just for funsies.
Syracuse minus 18 down to minus 11 at Liberty.
Yeah.
Kentucky minus 12 to minus 5 against Toledo. Kentucky lost a lot, but I actually think minus 5 is a comfortable number there. And then Missouri, minus 18 down to minus 11 at Wyoming, the start of the Kelly Bryant era. I like all of those games.
Missouri could be pretty good. There is yep. a lot of buzz that Missouri, I mean, it's a shame that as of now, they're not eligible for the postseason. I know that there's like an outside chance that changes. There's like an appeal mm-hmm. process going on. I don't really know. I haven't read, at least lately, what the latest is on that, but I know they were hopeful.
NCAA is generally pretty smart and timely yeah. in their appeals as well,
yeah.
so no issues
no,
there.
I'm sure it'll get cleaned up real quick.
Yeah.
I guess I'll run through two or three just for you, see what you think. So Purdue, if you tease them down to 3.5 at Nevada, I think Purdue's going to be all right. They've got the
yeah.
best playmaker on the field in Rondale Moore. Nevada, I believe, is starting a freshman at quarterback. Malik Henry did not win that job. of Last Chance U fame. So
QB2.
Yeah, I think he's perpetually QB2. I think Purdue's going to be a pretty decent team this year. I mean, it's on the road. Nevada's not bad. I mean, Nevada, they went 8-5, I think, a year ago. They don't bring back a ton of experience. Phil Steele wrote about that in his magazine this summer. He said, you know, listen, this might be the most talented Nevada team, but they don't bring back a ton of guys who have a lot of experience. So I think for Purdue in week one, I think that they get Nevada, and I think they get them easily. 3.5 seems pretty attainable to me. And the other one I like, I had another one here that I really like. Oh, Houston. Teasing Houston to +30 against Oklahoma. Houston's good. I mean, Oklahoma's going to light up. They're going to put up points. But Houston is they have Derek King, who's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in college football. They've got a great offense. Dana Holgorsen, obviously an offensive mastermind. I mean, I don't know how he is running a program. But I think Houston's going to go in against Oklahoma on – that game's on Sunday night, I believe. So Sunday night. So you do – you kind of don't like having to wait 24 hours for your teaser, so nope. you got to be patient. I know that's painful. It's not easy, but Houston +30 at Oklahoma, that seems like an easier one. I just feel like Oklahoma could get to 52, 55. I mean, Oklahoma's defense is – I don't know how – I think it's going to be better. I don't think it's going to be that much better. I think Houston at least gets to 21, 28 points.
Gosh, I'm not going to lie. I guess I knew this game was happening, but I sure did not even see it when I was thinking about teasers for this week. Because I did not make it to Sunday night at 7:30 when I was looking down this list of games.
That's okay.
Yeah, I like that a whole lot. I'm also not nearly as big of a believer in Jalen Hurts. He's good. He is good. He's not Kyler Murray. He's not Baker Mayfield. So that offense, while it will, of course, will still be really good, I don't think they're going to score with nearly the same ease as they have in years past. I'm with you. I don't think you can just roll Oklahoma out and win by 30 anymore.
Yeah, especially, I mean, Houston is a legitimate team. If Houston were to somehow beat Oklahoma, I mean, there's a path that I'm not saying playoff, but there's a path for them to get back into the New Year's six mix. I mean, just the rest of their schedule.
Yeah.
Prairie View A&M, well, I mean, Washington State, Tulane, North Texas, Cincinnati's a huge one. Connecticut, SMU, Central Florida, I think, is going to be worse this season. Memphis, a bigger one. Tulsa, Navy. Like, I mean, there's a path to 12-0 there if they get past Oklahoma, which is a big if, but I wouldn't rule it out completely. And if you give me 23 points, give me 30 in a teaser, I got to take that.
Amen. I'm in. Yeah, great fun.
There we go. All right. Well, Ross, hey, this is fun. We're going to take it week by week. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves. We're going to trust the process. We're going to have a little bit of fun, and we're just going to play loose this weekend. We're just going to be loose, you know, roll the balls out and get after it like you always do.
Look, I had a lot of fun. Coaches got me ready. I mean, our bodies are feeling better than they ever have coming out of training camp. And like I said, man, we're just ready to hit somebody else. Just trust the process one game at a time.
Yeah, man. It was the best summer we've ever had. So now it's time to
– guys are bought in.
We are bought in. Well, Ross, that's all the time we got, man. Thanks again for joining me. We'll do this again hopefully every week. I'm hoping to do this for Fridays. My schedule is going to get pretty loaded this season, but – I know the fans love doing the gambling stuff, so we're going to try to get into it a little bit more, all right?
Sounds great, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that's going to do it for College Football Country. Thank you guys again so much for listening. Be sure to tune in next week. I'll be reacting to week one of college football. Hope you guys took the advice. Again, maybe you just fade us. Who knows? But it's week one. I'm so happy it's back. Buy the boat. We're here. Hashtag buy the boat. Let's get rich this weekend. Go buy some aquamarine watercrafts, jet skis. I don't care. Whatever it is, go buy a little sailboat for yourself. It doesn't matter. We're getting rich this weekend, boys. Let's do it.